learn that everything is impermanent. Your current situation is impermanent. Your current mood is impermanent. Your sadness is impermanent. So is your joy. Your sickness is impermanent. So is your health. Everything will change.
Today, I'm really happy to have here with us Aman Zeli, leadership and executive coach who focused on leadership and executive coach who is focusing the attention on organization transformations, well-being, and education. Thank you so much, Aman, to be here with us. I'm looking forward for our conversation. And my first question is, what does mean to you?
It's an interesting question, Serena. I think I have a strange relationship with the term, I think. Because as a person, I have always been more focused on, what's ahead of me than on, what's behind me. So I'm not really very focused on the past. Therefore, I don't remember in my adult life thinking about going back somewhere. For example, around 10 years ago, I was speaking to a therapist because I was struggling with some anxiety. And I mentioned to her that I wanted to go back to being the same carefree person that I used to be. And she told me something to the effect that, Aman, your life is different now. You're a parent, you're a father now. You're going to have some natural parental anxiety. There's going to be some job anxiety. There's going to be some maybe social anxiety in certain situations. Some of that anxiety is actually helping you to become a better father. So you're never going to be the same person. You're going to be a different version of you. So in a sense, going back is not as desirable as moving forward, at least in my head. I'm not as nostalgic as other people may be. I tend to inhabit the present moment. So I don't know if that makes any sense, whether that was the answer you're looking for, Serena.
Yes, and I'm really curious about the different version of yourself. How can you find this new version of yourself, especially if you are transitioning or you are transforming yourself?
It's a process of discovery, and it's also a process of acceptance. Often we are very attached to our past version. I am, a part of me is very, very attached to the youth version of me. The youth version of me was, really carefree, did not have even a shred of anxiety, except maybe when I had to go up and speak on stage and before exams. Those were the two only two associations with anxiety that I had. But adult life is different. You have so many responsibilities. You're juggling much more. You're sleeping less. You're playing less. So as a result of that, your life is different. And I guess part of it is accepting that my life is different now. I am at a different phase now. In 10 years' time, my body will be 10 years older. Hopefully, God willing, it'll be a fit body, but it may not be, because old age can affect everything from bones to muscles to hearing and eyesight. My specs, for example, as I've grown older, I have needed to switch from normal glasses that I used to wear to progressive glasses. Now, it was a little irritating to adapt to that. But at some point, you've got to say, okay, this is part of the aging process and I have no option but to adapt. So you tend to adapt. And I guess that's what's, a big part of accepting that you're aging or accepting that you're different. So acceptance, I think, plays a big role in it. And
I'm hearing acceptance and adaptability.
Yes.
And these are two really powerful words for me. I struggled with them quite a lot.
Yeah.
Do you think it take courage to accept and to adapt, or what can be helpful to really accept that you are no longer the same person, no longer the same professional?
I think part of this is also society's fault, Serena, because you know, society tends to idolize the perfect, and society never prepares individuals for the fact that change will happen. I think the one very remarkable individual in history that talked about the omnipresence of change was Buddha. And I think his message to the world and his practice that he recommended for people was also that, look, learn that everything is impermanent. Your current situation is impermanent. Your current mood is impermanent. Your sadness is impermanent. So is your joy. Your sickness is impermanent. So is your health. Everything will change. And we unfortunately do not teach that to people. We don't teach that to kids. We don't teach that to adults. When do people learn this? They learn it once they have a crisis, and then they have to work with a therapist, or they need to work with a very skilled coach, because very frankly, coaches also focus a little too much on the business side of coaching, or you know, fixing the problem rather than addressing the attitudes of the individual that may be getting in the way. So if you're lucky and you find a great coach or a great therapist, or you find a good guru, if you can call it that, then you may find that, okay, I must learn to accept that change is going to happen, and you can make peace with it. So, yeah, I think the answer is really is looking at what are the things that society is trying to push on us. It's constantly pushing this superwoman or superman version that they want us to chase. And we know that's mythology. I mean, whether it's modeling or it is, you know, business media, Those are actually images. They are touched up and doctored. They are not telling us the full picture. I think our challenge is stemming from the fact that we are not questioning the narratives that have been fed to us, and we're not looking at the true nature of life.
I totally agree with you, and I'm also trying to reframe for myself the images that I have in my head in a different way, that are more aligned to who I am and not so much on society. Do you have any advice on finding a way to reconnect to who you are, what you really want to do, and what is the best decision for yourself?
I think yes. My experience, Serena, not only with you know, my own personal experience, but also with the people that I coach and I work with, it has been that feelings are a great source of information. So I'll give you an example. When I switched my career in 2010, that was 15 years ago. The driving force for that was that I was not feeling satisfied in my current career, or at that time, my current career. And I had to sit down and ask myself, why aren't you feeling happy? Because you've been in this line for long, you have gained all the things that people value, promotions, money, all of that. And why are you still not satisfied? And as I thought about it, as I analyzed that feeling of dissatisfaction, I found that the activities that my role wanted me to focus on were not giving me any reward, any joy, because they were activities that were not contributing to human beings. They were contributing to bottom lines, they were contributing to top lines and metrics and all of that. But I found that it was more meaningful for me to make a difference to another human being's life. If I could coach somebody, guide somebody, train somebody, if I could help them become more successful, if I could help them become more confident, if I could help them get promoted. Those are the things that brought me joy. And when I realized that there are some things that bring me joy and there are some things that will bring me meaning and there are some things that bring me dissatisfaction, it told me a little bit about who I was as a person. As a person, I cared more for human beings than inanimate things. And that was my process of discovery. So it started out with the feeling of dissatisfaction, and that inquiry and reflection actually led me, it gave me a clue as to what I valued, maybe my values. So, you know, that deep dive into our feelings, the discovery of our values, that is kind of peeling the layers away to understand who you might be. Am I answering your question?
Yes, and I also think that it's a work connected to redefining what success means for you and what career growth means for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important to ask ourselves, okay, to me, what is success?
And again, we need to think outside the box of society and all the ideas that we have about what is success, what you need to do, what are the expectations, etc. You have experienced also relocation from one continent to another continent, right?
Yeah.
Anything that you want to share about your experience dealing with a different, maybe culture, work environments, anything that you want to share about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I actually am having a pretty decent time with the relocation. I think living in Portugal for the last a year has been very interesting. Lisbon is a very nice city. It's not overly crowded. It's a big city. It's a capital city. It's got great infrastructure. It's very walking friendly, cycling friendly. It's a mix of urban spaces with natural spaces. It has a 2,500-acre forest in the middle of the city and many parks. So, you know, very livable, decent weather, except in the summer where it can be quite hot, and in the winter when it can be both cold and rainy, except those little spots. So, and the people are really friendly and welcoming as well. So in that sense, I think having chosen a place that is welcoming and friendly seems to have been a good thing. And I think the relocation has helped in, in that sense. But there are other things that require adaptation. And that only happens when you go and do things in the city. I remember when I was still new here, I boarded the bus in Lisbon from the, from the rare entrance, and the driver got really annoyed, and he actually asked me to get off the bus, and I was like, wow, that was really rude. But but the thing is, by doing by going by buses and making that mistake is how you learn. Okay, you don't take the rear entrance, you actually get on using the front entrance. The back entrance is only for exit. So by engaging with the city, with the people, with professionals, by doing work, having meetings, that's how you learn about it. You can't lead a sheltered existence. You have to expose yourself to the elements, and you can't get offended. I mean, yeah, that driver was rude. Okay. I mean, it was one incident. That happens in every place. Even in your home country, you will have encountered rude people. But, you know, to me, those are all experiences that have the potential to teach us about what to do differently next time. And that's what adaptability is. You know, you spoke about that earlier. So, and, you know, we must keep trying. I think I must also point out that that, you know, you when you move to a new place, you have to recognize that in the old place, people knew you. They knew your work. You had trust and you had a brand name, and that actually gave you work and opportunities. When you move to a new place, you actually leave all of them behind. And in the new place, it doesn't matter how many years of experience you have or how much success you've had or what skill you have. People don't know that. So you kind of have to rebuild your social network. So you've got to get out and meet more people, as many people as you can. You've got to offer samples of your work. You've got to take all opportunities to demonstrate what you can do. And so other people can get to know you and you can get to know them. You must reinvest in building your brand, all of those things. So it's it takes constant work. It takes patience. It takes optimism. It takes family and friends that are willing to support you. And you don't realize it when you're planning the change, but it is a much bigger change than you ever think it will be.
This is so beautiful to hear. And I'm wondering if you have a final advice for our listeners that maybe are struggling a little bit in coming back or going forward, as you said at the beginning.
Yeah, I think I may have three quick points to talk about. You know, this whole act of coming back that you're talking about or moving forward. I am hearing the word resilience in there. And I think resilience has two main pillars. One is you and the other is your community. Now, we are all given messages, like we were talking earlier about society tells you, don't give up, keep trying, all of that. So, you know, that is good advice. But the advice that we are not given is that your community will play a big role in your resilience as well. So we focus only on one part of it. And that's why I think many of us may struggle with resilience. So we must keep trying, keep striving, never give up. But we must also build or seek a community that is willing to provide us with support. Never hesitate to ask for help. Go out there. Tell your family, tell your friends, you know, whoever you need support from, your community, people that you know, saying, hey, this is what I'm struggling with. This is what I'd like help in. Don't be afraid of being turned down. You know, many of them will be bus drivers that will want to throw you out for. But there will be many other bus drivers who will be very happy to help you and guide you. And I've met many like that as well. So don't be discouraged. If one person is not helping or has turned you down, just keep at it. I think that's really, really important. And always remember that feelings of dissatisfaction and feelings of struggle are really powerful, because the impetus to change, the impetus to do something new, to shift careers, to build a new product, all of that comes from dissatisfaction. So actually, dissatisfaction is a really powerful thing. So if you feel dissatisfaction, you know, lean into that. Ask yourself why you're dissatisfied. Take some action. Do something new. And you know, I just again want to reiterate the community part, because there's this researcher called Dr. Michael Ungar on resilience. His research is built on that, and he says that all his research has taught him that when people have come back or bounced back, they have done so because there was tremendous community support. He's talked about how people who were affected by the tsunami in Japan, children who were orphaned and who had nobody to look after them, they bounced back, they went back to school, they made friends again. And the reason they did that was because Japanese society and government provided them a platform to, to go back. They placed them in the care of another relative, and they gave financial and schooling support and all of that. So that that community piece, don't forget. And remember that many human beings have a deep-seated need to help others. If you ask, you shall receive it. And I think that's what the Bible also says, right?
Thank you so much, Aman, for this beautiful conversation.
Thank you so very much, Serena. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this conversation, and please feel free to share it with colleagues who need to hear that. You can always find the podcast on all the platforms and on imback.work.